part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
All right, let's get this thing started. I am Christian Horn. This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am on the line with my good friend Jay Holtham.
Hello, everybody.
And we are here to discuss the only thing that there is to discuss in cinemas this weekend, the new X-Men movie entitled Logan.
Yes.
Which just came out this weekend. This is the latest in the series of both Wolverine and X-Men movies.
Yep.
As I seem to recall, the last X-Men movie that we both saw, we actually saw together, X-Men Apocalypse, did not yes. go so well.
No.
And this movie, well, why don't you share some of your thoughts about Logan, which for some reason is really funny. I keep wanting to call it Wolverine, but Wolverine was the second one, The Wolverine.
The Wolverine was the second one.
And yep. this is just Logan, which
this
I guess...
is just Logan.
Yeah, yeah. I guess is based off of a graphic novel or a miniseries, mm-hmm. I think, that Mark Millar may have written called Old Man Logan, which I've never read.
So. Neither have I. I've never read it. I'm a little familiar with the character because it appears in he appears in Marvel's Contest of Champions, and they've integrated, for those who aren't aware, so the Old Man Logan, we'll start there and then we'll get to the movie. Yeah. I have lots of things to say.
yeah, as do I.
Variations on a theme, though. Yeah. Old Man Logan is, Marvel doesn't really do Elseworlds, but it was another universe set far in the future.
Alternate timeline.
Yeah. Where most of the superheroes were dead, the supervillains were kind of ruling the country, and Logan is the last remaining X-Man.
Yeah.
And I believe in the comic book, the movie, again, we'll discuss it, varies from this. I believe in the comic, Logan was somehow responsible for killing all of the X-Men.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that that's correct. Someone will correct me, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And that he was sort of living an isolated life, and then into his world comes a clone, X-23, and he is brought back into the world. And now both of those characters are in the current Marvel continuity.
Yeah. Well, X-23 was a character that, you know, obviously it's a very important character in the movie of Logan, mm-hmm. but was a character that was introduced on an animated series, which I used to like uh-huh. very much. And I actually interviewed one of the directors and character designers, Stephen Gordon. He was actually the very first interview I ever did for this podcast.
Wow.
Yeah, because I used to love the show so much. I mean, X-Men Evolution was a really kind of fun take on the X-Men that kind of took it back to the beginning, but used different characters and was a little different. It was a little bit sort of not as complex as, say, something like Batman, the animated series, or like mm-hmm. Bruce Timm stuff. But it was still a fun show. And X-23 was a character that was introduced on that animated series at the sort of like the end of the third season. And it's sort of very much obviously the same origin, like a character mm-hmm. that is cloned from Wolverine because a government agency wants to basically make another Wolverine and ends right. up, as government agencies do in these cases, totally screwing things up.
Yeah.
And as introduced in the X-Men Evolution, series, she's very much like sort of an antagonist. Like
right.
she does not, she's infiltrating the X-Mansion. She's kind of taking out the X-Men. And then in the comics makes her sort of first appearance in this Joe Quesada. I don't know if he wrote and illustrated it, but I remember this series. It came out, it was called NYX, and it was sort of about young mutants or young superheroes in New York City. And
oh, wow.
it kind of came out like two issues and then disappeared for a while. It was one of those things that, like, when Marvel was going through a phase with a lot of books where it was like something would start and then it would be like months and months would go by. And then people would be like, what the hell? Like, you started this book and then they eventually wrapped it up. And I remember picking it up, I think, like on sale at a comic shop and finally reading the whole thing. But I remember I read the first like issue or two that came out before the series disappeared and I stopped caring, you know, but yeah, it's like sort of like very much a legacy sort of heroine, Marvel style.
I mean, it fits in. Again, we are definitely going to talk about this movie.
Because
you know, X-23 is now the new Wolverine, and is part of that whole wave of, you know, Riri Williams, Amadeus Cho, all of those sort of new versions of the old heroes.
Which has begun, you know, depending on however you look at it, it sounds like, you know, through the internet rumor mill, a lot of this stuff is happening because of creators' rights or movie rights, or, you know, Marvel is kind of like shaking up the table a little bit so that they can keep other companies from having the rights to their characters, or, you know, I don't really know, or not having to pay out royalties to like certain creators. I don't know. I mean, that's sort of the more insidious, you know, take of things. But either way, this is sort of like what's been happening at DC is sort of starting to finally happen at Marvel, which is like other characters are taking over the mantle of established and loved characters that have been around for a long time. Correct?
Yeah, I think that's correct. And there's also, I mean, the insidious back end stuff is true and legit, but there's also the like trying to update it. You know, they've basically replaced nearly all of the sort of legacy heroes with either women and or people of color. So it's sort of updating it and giving, you know, sort of spins on it. You know, Amadeus Cho is not the original Hulk in any way, shape or form. I mean, not in any way, shape, or form, but, you know, he retains intelligence, and it's a much more sort of fun book than the dour Bruce Banner wrestling with his demons kind of books.
Gotcha.
But none of that is germane to the very, very, in my opinion, fantastic film that is Logan.
Well, let's talk about Wolverine first, because I don't even think that Wolverine has ever been addressed on this podcast, and... And like Wolverine, like, I mean, this is in sort of in relation to the movie. I mean, Wolverine has always been like a really weird character, because Wolverine from the beginning has these claws. He was like nothing you'd kind of ever seen like in mainstream comics at the time. He has claws that come out of his fists. And it was known from the beginning. I mean, maybe not the beginning. I mean, his first appearance was a guest appearance in the Hulk. But once he was kind of like ported over to the X-Men and became sort of the best he is at what he does, and what he does isn't very nice, bub. It was insinuated that this guy's a killer. Like, these claws are not meant to pick your teeth like a toothpick. They are meant to, you know, slash people. But the problem is that at the time he's introduced, late 70s, early 80s or whatever, he is sort of hampered by the desire, by the fact that these books are still sort of mainly seen for kids or, you know, or teenagers, right? Like they are not made for 30, 40 somethings like they are today. So basically it is just really, Wolverine has always been that character that has been held back by the medium that he was created for, right?
Yes, I'd say that that's fair. That he was always, even in the Miller, the Miller miniseries that really established the "I'm the best there is." I think that's literally the first line of it. "I'm the best there is at what I do, and what I do isn't very nice." It's still pretty sort of bloodless. He's mostly fighting hand ninjas who just dissolve when you kill them, and a bear one time, and everyone else, it's pretty, tame for that reputation of, you know, he's the berserker and he just goes crazy with bloodlust. And, you know, he was had that long time where he didn't really have any memory of who he had been.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
He was just Logan and no one knew where he came from. He wasn't even sure because, I mean, as everyone is aware, I think literally most people on the planet are aware, his claws are adamantium. And it was unclear for a very long time whether or not, and his skeleton is reinforced with adamantium as well. It was unclear as to whether or not that had been done to him, whether that was somehow part of his mutation, who did it or why.
Yeah.
All of that was a mystery. And he was, I mean, that's one of the reasons he became one of the most popular characters in the Marvel Universe. I would say probably top three most popular pre the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
Which sort of upended all of that. But, you know, Wolverine was definitely the breakout hit of breakout star from the first X-Men movie and the breakout star from the X-Men comics far and away.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing is that Wolverine sort of became, I mean, he became very much even more so, maybe more so than the Punisher in a way, the sort of embodiment of like this Dirty Harry, like, you know, like I kick ass. You guys have been pussies for a long time.
Yeah.
I just kick ass. Like,
yeah.
We're just going to kill people and this is the way that we're going to handle it. And he sort of like embodied like the male sort of ego or aggro, like, you know, I'm going to get in there. And, but he was also popular because of the fact that he had a soul on top of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he was very, I mean, he embraced what he did and he felt like he had to do it. And you had the berserker rage, which was like a very big thing. You know, I think John Byrne said it like in an interview. And I think John Byrne and the Chris Claremont run in the comics was very sort of much what established him as being like, wow, this is a character to look out for, because I think the very first time you ever really saw him draw blood was in that Hellfire Club sequence where he takes out a couple of guards and the blood is not red, but you see him like stab a couple of people and it's like, wow, okay. And there's that one classic scene where he's pulling himself out of the sewer and he's like, you had your turn and now it's Wolverine's turn or whatever, you know? So, I mean, he's always been sort of like this balance of like tortured hero and homicidal maniac, you know? And I think John Byrne even said, like in an early interview, like the thing that he always enjoyed about Wolverine was that the fact that you could be sitting at the breakfast table with him and somebody would just say the wrong thing by accident and he would just basically disembowel you. Like, you know what I mean? Like that was the crazy thing. And over the years, Wolverine, you know, has been tossed through the mill, different writers or whatever, and kind of softened up in a way to not even necessarily resemble the early character that he was.
Yeah, very much. I mean, he definitely got a lot cuddlier and a lot gentler as he became sort of the centerpiece in a way of the Marvel Universe like that. And certainly to varying degrees of success, the centerpiece of the film Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Significantly varying degrees of success on
definitely.
That point. That, you know, Hugh Jackman is the one who became the huge star out of those movies. And and I think in the movies went through a very similar sort of I'm mysterious and brooding and tough and dangerous in a PG-13 way to I've become less and less dangerous and less sort of brooding as the movies go by.
Yeah. It's really interesting. It's interesting to track his development in sort of the films versus his development in the comics, because he would always be bouncing around from like, oh, he, you know, he's in love with Jean Grey. He's really got his little heart. He's a really poor Wolverine. And then it's like, holy shit, get out of the way. You know what I mean?
Then,
you know, I remember one of the big moments that, I mean, I was never a huge Wolverine fan. I always liked the character and thought like, oh, this is cool. But I gravitated more towards like Cyclops and Kitty Pryde and, you know, the characters that sort of like had their own inner torture, but there was like a moral compass to them. Like with Wolverine, you never got the moral compass. And he was always mouthing off to people, which made him seem like a bit of a jerk too. It was just like, really, dude, come on. We're trying to solve this. Like, get in line. Like, don't be a douche. Like, come on, really.
You are such a Cyclops man.
Yeah, I am. But you know, I mean, that's the thing is like, of course there would have to be that character, but after about 20 years of reading the same thing where it's like, listen, bub, I don't care what you have to say, whether it's Captain America or Cyclops or Storm or whatever. It's like, can somebody really just get him some Prozac already? And, you know, anyway, Wolverine was never one of my favorites, but it's obvious that he, you know, is a huge icon in the Marvel universe and has taken center stage. And, you know, to a larger extent, I think you're right. I think Hugh Jackman has had a huge role in that, like become sort of the iconic face of Wolverine in like, you know, the larger media landscape. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know. Wolverine's never one of my favorites. I don't know about you, but I would like reading about him every once in a while. He was a guy that you would get in small doses. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it'd be like, okay. And it's as part of the larger X-Men. But anyway, at this point, the point that we've reached, it's 2017, and now we have Logan, which I think, you know, is, and I you know, I don't know about the comics, but I think this is the very first time that we can say, like, okay, like, this is the character, this character needed to be rated R. Like, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of people have known that for a long time, but I think that the rating or the level of absolute, like, insane violence in this movie is appropriate to this character. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And it really did match. Like, even more than and I can't remember if we've discussed this on the podcast. I think you and I have discussed it a little bit. I know I've fought with people on Facebook about it. You know, even with Deadpool, which I didn't feel blood or whatever aside, I didn't feel that needed to be R-rated.
Yes, it did. Anyway, go ahead.
I didn't really feel like it, but that's the, I didn't feel like it needed to be, that it wasn't a big step forward for, like, comic book movies. This feels different. This feels like a movie meant for adult human beings. And part of that is the not just the violence, because it is so incredibly violent.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So many head impalings in
detail.
But it also, like, the relationship the movie has to violence.
Yeah.
I feel like is also really adult and in a way needs to be R-rated. That it's not really celebrating it or even glossing over it.
Yeah.
Like, the violence is very real and it feels very much like this is the world that Logan, at least in the point of the movie, is living in.
Yeah.
And we need to deal with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we should definitely talk about the plot a little bit, which is basically, I mean, the basics of it, which before we delve into that, I mean, basically, you know, Wolverine, Logan, is kind of like, this is set in the future. I forget, it's like 2029 or something like that.
Yeah, 2029.
So about 12 years into the future, America has apparently gone to shit. there are no more, you know, which plausible, it's happening now. You know, there have not been any new mutants born within what, like, I don't know how much they say, but it's been a long time since there have been any new mutants appearing. And Logan is basically kind of living, I don't know if he's on the run, but he's sort of like, he's on the down, he's under the radar, you know what I'm saying? He's in hiding, he's got Professor X with him, and he's got Caliban with him, and they are in hiding, and they are basically trying to make an attempt to leave the United States for good, or at least this continent, North America, because the sense is that it's not a welcome place for his kind, correct? Yeah.
Right. It's, I mean, it's not a good place to be in general. It's just like, it's, you know, it, yeah, but it's not certainly not good for mutants anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not that it ever was, but I mean, at this point, it seems like stuff has hit the fan. And part of the reason for that is that something that Professor X was involved in, some tragedy where he lost control of his powers, or maybe didn't, we don't know. And a bunch of people were like slaughtered by accident, right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, he killed. It's definitely implied that he killed at least all the X-Men from the movies that we're aware of.
Yeah.
Because he's suffering from, they don't really specify, but he's suffering from some like degenerative mental condition.
Yeah.
A la Alzheimer's that gives him seizures. And, you know, when Professor X has a seizure, he kills people in like a mile radius.
Yeah, yeah. He can't control his powers, and there's basically some sort of like big freak out. So yeah. And a lot of the beginning of this is is finding out, you know, what's been happening. But in the due course of events, you start to discover that people are trying to track down Wolverine. One is a woman who you don't know what her deal is. And Logan just is at the point where he's like, I'm not helping anybody. Like, I'm done with everything. I don't want to get involved in anything. Obviously, it is the reluctant hero that we are so like that we've seen in movies again and again and again. And of course, we all know that he's going to get sucked into it and something's going to happen. And then the next is a group called the Reavers, which I was wondering during. I was like, are these the Reavers or like what are they, the Marauders? Like I kept. And then they finally name them towards the end of the movie, which whatever, nerd boy nitpick. But I was just like trying to figure it out in my own head. And these guys are tracking Logan because they think that this woman has been trying to track down Logan. So they're trying to find the woman. And basically what you find out is that they are trying to track down a little girl. And you, at the beginning, you don't know. I mean, anybody who's seen the trailer knows why, but you're not supposed to know like what is so important about this girl, right?
Right.
Right. And so at that point, things eventually converge. Logan runs into the girl's quote unquote mother and the girl, and you find out that the young girl is basically part of a larger sort of corporate government project, which is to clone mutants and use them for the government, and which is part of a much larger, bigger, crazier, sinister plot, which has been to suppress the birthing of mutants for generations so that only this company and the government can have access to mutants as weapons, correct? And this little girl was part of that project. And the woman who was not her mother helped her escape because they were about to terminate all the kids because they saw them as a failed experiment, right?
Right. Because they couldn't control the kids.
Yeah.
Because they were actual, children. Yeah. And then I was going to say spoiler alert, but it's all spoilers.
Yeah.
Then they hit upon a way of creating something they could control so they no longer needed the kids and were going to kill them.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And, it's interesting from the beginning of the movie. I was sitting there in the theater. The theater was pretty full. So I think this movie's going to, I saw like an 11 a.m. show on a Saturday. And I think it's going to do well, this movie.
Yeah.
I was sitting there in the theater and the beginning starts off and Logan's like asleep in the backseat of a limousine. He's sort of been, I'm not going to say reduced, but, he is basically like an Uber driver, sort of like a limo driver. And that's sort of his undercover job, like keeping him on hidden from whoever's, would want to chase him. And the opening scene starts off that he's like asleep in the backseat of his limo and some dudes are trying to like jack his car for the tires or the rims or something. Latino guys. And and he gets out and at first I was like, okay, here we go. Like, oh, come on, guys, don't rip off the car. And there comes a moment in the fight where he's getting his ass kicked and you're like, oh, what's and he gets thrown on the ground and you see that moment where the Berserker, and I don't think we've ever seen this in another X-Men movie.
No,
where
we
the Berserker rage like starts and it's like shocking to me as a fan because I was like, holy cow, like this is it. And then he goes apeshit and that sequence of the fight was just like crazy time.
Oh my God, that was so insane.
Yeah, because for the first time ever, you're seeing a dude who has claws and you're seeing the repercussions of those claws, like how much damage he can do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, limbs go flying. Oh God, that first sequence is so great because it also, it is the reluctant hero and it is also the aging hero, which we've seen before.
Yeah.
There are little sort of touches of Skyfall with Bond being sort of wounded, but still it's like, it's such a great sequence because it balances all of that. It balances the berserker rage and the incredible violence with sort of like little bits of like humor. One of his claws doesn't fully come out.
Oh yeah.
Trying to pull it out. Yeah. And you're like, what is happening? But yeah. And then the limbs, so many limbs, so many heads. Oh my God. Yeah, it was so bloody.
It was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
For an X-Men movie, like, I remember I had to remind myself, like, oh, wow, like, this is, like, seriously, like, almost like a Japanese samurai or, like, something. Like, yeah. I was like, this is crazy. And there's a part of me watching it, because Wolverine's history is, the comic character is kind of rooted in that genre, too. I was like, oh, wow, like, this is crazy. You know what I mean? Like, he absolutely went apeshit. And it's sort of the first time that you see that in... like big media. I mean, you've seen him get angry, but you've never seen him like lose control like that. And to the point of where he has no compunctions about what he's doing. You know, he's always had like the other X-Men to be like, Wolverine, chill out or slow down or you're not supposed to kill people. Like this time it's like all bets are off, you know?
Yeah. No, it was incredibly brutal and violent. And yeah, without mercy or
head stabbings. Like I was stab that guy in the head. Yeah.
I seriously was shocked at the amount of head stabbings and right off the top. And like, it's really crazy. Yeah, it's such a crazy sequence.
Yeah. And it's just really weird because like at the time you're watching it, you're like, oh, this is crazy. But at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, oh, we're totally embracing like what Wolverine is at this point. Like this is what this character should be doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it goes on so long. Like I'm thinking about, you know, my favorite of the X movies is X2.
Yeah.
And there is that like sequence when the commandos try to take the school. I mean, as they do in everyone.
Yeah.
They take the school and Wolverine like goes after them. But it really is like two guys and they're covered in gear. So he stabs them and it doesn't seem to like you're not really sure if he actually killed any of them. And he probably stabs them through. But you never know. And there's, again, no blood at all.
Or maybe he never finished them off or, you know, what I mean?
But this is like, it's like a 10-minute sequence.
yeah.
Like four guys, he just shreds.
Yeah. Without any reservation about using his. And that's sort of the thing that hit me, especially being a comic fan and having read the X-Men for years and years and years and years, which I don't necessarily anymore. Every once in a while, I'll pick up a book here or there. But the thing that hit me was like, yeah, even beyond some of the comics, which, again, I've not stayed on top of Wolverine. I don't know how brutal some of the books have gotten maybe in recent years, but this is like, oh yeah, he's a killing machine. Like this is, he is sort of like the Terminator. Like, you know, that's what he was made for. That's what he's supposed to do. And you know, there's none of this sort of like we were talking about before, like I feel bad about what I'm doing. No, he just goes apeshit. And it's basically sort of what he is, again, you know, made to do. Like and seeing it on film as opposed to a comic, it's very much like it's a little more powerful because you're like I don't know that the comics have ever shown him stabbing people in that, you know, like that brutally. Yeah. You know, so I think like it's like, wow, we've gone beyond. And again, I really have no problem with it. I was just shocked by the fact that like, oh, this is where we're going. Like this is, and it's a really great opening to the movie because it does say that it's like, get ready. because here we go. Strap your belts on because we're going for a ride, you know?
Exactly.
In that way, it's very different than any other Marvel or X movie, I think.
Yeah. So you sat through those two other Wolverine movies. This is not that movie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, also, this is not Captain America Civil War. This is not Iron Man. This is not. This guy's here to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and he's all out of bubble gum. You know what I mean? Exactly. So, I mean, yeah, and basically you get to see sequences of him doing the limo service, and he goes back to his hideout, which is across the border in Mexico, and you sort of get the idea that there has been a giant wall built like there.
Yeah, yeah, you know? They're pretty actually explicit about there's a huge wall. I mean, that's another thing I really like about this view. I mean, it's only like 11 years in the future.
Yeah,
and they really do a great balance of like there's a wall and there seems to be some like a lot of sort of political turmoil, but life is still going on. Like the sequence of him driving his limo, like his limo passengers are all perfectly normal people. Like it's parties. It Vegas is still sort of Vegas. Like all those things are still kind of the same.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just, you get that sense that at the edges though, things are a lot worse.
Well, but it's also a direct, I think that scene with the bros in the limo and then the wedding party or whatever where she pops her breasts out.
Yeah.
I think it's very much sort of like a very big they're insinuating that it's normal for a certain type of people, like very like upper middle class, possibly Caucasian, you know what I'm saying? And like very, this is the way that it, these are the people who had stayed the same for or gotten better for.
Yeah.
And you see lines of like immigrants or people like along the wall and, you know, they're like yelling at them and like, yeah, whatever, America. And, you know, it is very much an insinuation like, yeah, it's kind of going along, but it's going along for a certain class of people.
Yes, exactly. And yeah. Yep.
Yeah,
I would say that's one of the things that I really like about it. It's not heavy handed about any of that.
Yeah,
and
no.
It feels really real and really current.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And it's like you said, it's there for you to discover if your mind is open to it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That may not have been what they wanted to insinuate. But for me, I was watching it and I was like, oh, wow, we just got a little political here. And again, not overtly, but enjoyable enough, you know, smart enough to be like, okay, yeah, this is kind of the direction this country has gone in, which is very interesting. But he goes to Mexico because maybe things are slightly better for mutants in Mexico. And that's where he's keeping Professor X.
I mean, the sense that I get also about him keeping Professor X in the thing is also that, like, Professor X, as his mind is deteriorating, is really dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's moved him to a place where they're squatting in like an abandoned factory, and Caliban's the only person there, and it's as far away from other people as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Both for them, but also for other people, so that Professor X can't be a danger to anyone other than Caliban and Wolverine.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's absolutely right. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, that is part of the reason, because if something goes wrong, or you know, what you find out is basically that, you know, Logan has been also pilfering drugs, you know, so that he can keep Professor X and his powers under control. And it's some really interesting stuff there between him and Caliban. And Caliban is what's his face too. It was great to see him in
Merchant.
This role. Yeah, Stephen Merchant, who is The Office and like all
Office, Hello Ladies.
Hello Ladies, which is like one of my favorite HBO shows.
God,
and like
so
great, so cringeworthy, where you're just like, But yeah, Stephen Merchant does a fantastic job as Caliban.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because at first I thought he was Leech. Because I was like, oh, they're trying to keep Professor X under control, you know, but I guess it's Caliban. And what you sort of find out, at least in this iteration, is that Caliban is not only sort of an albino, but like he cannot, like the sun burns his skin. And he's sort of playing nursemaid to Professor X and to Logan. So, you know, he's also sort of playing the moral soundboard for Logan, yeah, for somebody to point out sort of like the plot points, what's going on, and being like, dude, what you're doing is not working, you know, almost, yeah, the voice of morality in the film.
Yeah. The voice of reason.
Yeah, reason. Exactly, exactly. And but it's interesting. I wonder is like, why would they choose Caliban? Because, I mean, he's sort of like, at least in this iteration of him, he's a tracker, right? He can track mutants. Yeah. But why?
And was that always his power? I could never really remember Caliban's power set.
I'm not sure. I got to look it up. But anyway, Caliban, you know, he's playing nursemaid, and there's a lot of really good moments between him and Logan. You know, I thought the acting in the movie was great. I mean, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff there between, like, what is sort of the dynamic between Logan, right? Because now Logan is the caretaker, which is not his role. Like, he doesn't mm-hmm. want to be that, but for some reason he feels the desire to really be watching over Professor X.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and at this point is sort of where things sort of start to settle in, and you see more sequences of Logan doing his limousine driving stuff. And, he gets approached at a funeral, by a Latin woman who, I don't know the actress's name, but she's
Elizabeth Rodriguez.
Yeah.
She's so good.
Yeah. She's in, Orange is the New Black.
Yep.
Yeah. And she's a fantastic actress as well. And she's kind of speaking in Spanish to him, which luckily I understood everything that she was saying. And it was great. It's a great scene because she's like yelling at him across from the graveyard, and she's like, "You're Wolverine," and he's like, "No, I'm not. I don't know what you're talking about." And she starts yelling stuff like, "Why are you hiding? You know, like, you were a hero. I need a hero. I need help." You know, in Spanish, and it comes across like really, I don't know, man. Like, maybe I'm absorbing too much of the world that's going on outside. but, you know, on the last podcast that we did, which was 24, there were a lot of things in there that had to deal with, like, Muslims and, like, and also sort of, like, African-American people. And in this movie, it's stuff like this is just, like, hitting me harder because it's, like, this is like sort of a Latin person like crying for help, and I need your help. And right now is a time in society where it's starting to feel like, yeah, this segment of society needs
our help.
Needs our help, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very much sort of the thing where Logan kind of turns his back on her, and she contacts him again through the Uber service. And at first, you know, she's like, "I have money. I will offer you money," you know. Mm. And that, again, is the reluctant hero being like, "Well, I need money," because he wants to buy a boat to get, you know, to just take Professor X and take him on like a whatever forever sea voyage. But then it sort of becomes like a more desperate thing when, spoilers, she gets killed.
Right.
You know.
And he's left with her daughter, Laura.
Yes, Laura, who we find out in a sort of very awesome sequence.
That sequence is so good.
Very awesome sequence, you know, where the Reavers eventually track Wolverine down, and he's got the girl, and he's trying to make out like what she is, because she mm-hmm. basically stowed away in his trunk. Like, he didn't say, "Come with me." She stowed away in his trunk, popped out, and he's like, "What's going on? I've got this backpack." And then the Reavers show up, and I think it's Professor X who discovers her and is, right, like, trying to say to Wolverine, like, "Hey, man, like, this is your daughter. Like, this is, or she is part of you." You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really good sequence because it's sort of like there's all these things bouncing around inside Logan's head where he's sort of like, "What's happening? Like, wait, what is this? And I want no part of this, but wait, you're saying that this is part of me?" Like there's a lot of really good sort of like undertones and underpinnings going on in that sequence before it sort of explodes into the crazy action sequence it becomes.
Yeah, there's so many things going on because, like, we've seen this little girl around, and again, if you've seen the trailer, you know where it's going.
Yeah.
But it's still well done because she's got this, she's such a weird, mute little girl, and seems like, in that sort of movie kid way, both sort of tough and completely vulnerable. She brings her in and she's just like eating all of this cereal. But there's Professor X trying to say she's like you, and Wolverine just doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to be bothered with this. He wants to get away. He's actually willing to leave her behind and just get away with Professor X. And not even Caliban. He just wants to get Professor X in the car and drive and leave this whole mess behind. But the Reavers cut him off, and then hilarity ensues.
Basically what happens, I mean, Wolverine kind of, the Reavers show up, and which character was this? I can't remember. Well, I think the actor that plays sort of like the main bounty hunter, I can't find his name right now, but I thought he was really good. Pierce. I believe the actor's name is Boyd Holbrook. Basically, there's a confrontation at this sort of like, I don't know what it was, like it's a factory, like you said. And they confront Wolverine, and he's brought like the Mexican sort of police with him. He's got a full squad.
And mercenaries. There's like 20 guys.
Yeah. 20, like a lot of guys. And, you know, if you know anything about the Mexican police, you know that they are possibly easily bought off and or paid for. So they are ready to kick some mutant ass. And at this point, you've gotten enough of a sense of Wolverine's abilities to understand that he is not in peak fighting condition and he does not regenerate as fast. So he could be in big trouble.
Yep.
And then the shit really hits the fan when they try and grab the girl.
Yep.
And it's one of those awesome sequences where this big dude with like a mechanical arm, like a huge dude, like goes up to take the girl and cut to outside where Wolverine and everyone is. And there's been sort of a fight and Wolverine's been a bit subdued. And it's just like this great sequence where it's like you hear the screaming on the inside and shooting about and rah, rah, the girl like, you know, doing her animal growl. And then she comes out and she's got a decapitated head in her hands.
Yes, she does.
And at that point, I mean, there's so much for me to say, and I've been saying it on Facebook. But like at that point, you're sort of like, as an audience member, this is like what just happened, because there is a child who anywhere between 10 and 12 at this point, like very young.
She looks so young.
Yeah.
Like so young.
Yeah. 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 And drops the head and rolls it towards Pierce and his followers. And you're just like, wow. And at that point, they've only insinuated violence. Like at that point, they haven't shown her do anything. And she starts walking towards Pierce. And this is like a great moment because Pierce at this point knows that Wolverine's kind of washed up, doesn't give a crap, isn't really necessarily afraid of Wolverine. But she starts walking towards him and he's like, hey, Laura. Hey, hold on, hold on. Now, wait a minute. We don't do this. You know, we don't do this. And it's like he's terrified of her. And you're like,
he's clearly the person. He did not warn his team about what they were expecting. He clearly knows and tries gamely to de-escalate the situation, but it is way too late.
Yeah, it is way too late for that. And she goes into action, and boy, does she.
Wow.
Yeah, a really incredibly directed action sequence between her and basically all of the other guys that have no chance in hell against this dynamo of a kid, you know, and it's really funny because there is a part of me, it's like you've really got to sort of suspend your disbelief at this point because you've basically got like giant groups of mercenaries trying to take down like what is a 11-year-old kid. I mean, whatever you're going to say about her powers and her claws and her exoskeleton and whatever, there is a strength level there where I believe that she would be outmatched. But the action kicks in so fast and so hard that, you know, I think it's her speed that sort of makes you suspend that disbelief.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the speed, the ferocity of her attacks. mean, she is just unbelievable. Like, you buy it, and just the viciousness of the whole thing, and that sequence is amazing. I guess this is maybe from the comics as well, because this was not in the trailers, thankfully, so it was a surprise to me. She has two claws on each hand, but she also has another claw in her foot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That makes an appearance. You're like, oh, yeah, then we've got, this is a real problem. And it's all adamantium, and it's all just vicious.
Yeah, unstoppable metal. And she does not stop. Like, she no. is ready to go, and she's ready to kick their ass, and she's not, you know, she's not going to stop. And it's just, it's pretty visceral. And for me, yeah, I mean, this is where I get to the point of, like, where I'm like, what is happening? Because, I mean, I feel like it is a very good filmmaking, I don't know what you call it, trope, technique, mm-hmm. what you would call it. But I mean, it is excellent because it is the, you're not expecting this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not expecting it. I mean, you are expecting this kid to be a badass, but you're not expecting it to be as utterly crazy as it becomes, because obviously I have a child around this kid's age, and
yeah.
you know, this is going to maybe go into different places, and yeah, but for me, it's like really weird, because I'm like, not only is it that the kid is causing violence, but there is very much a scene where somebody impales the kid, like drives it's like a grappling hook through her shoulder,
yeah.
and it pops out the other end, and she's like, "Arr!" And I'm like, okay, like, I know that this is fiction. I know
yeah.
that this is a character that heals instantly. But it's just really weird for me, not even just as a parent, but I think, like, even any adult sees this and is like, this is a kid. Like, that
yeah.
we've sort of reached this point in society where in a mainstream comic book movie, like, it's okay to show that now. And it's just weird. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I had that same feeling, because normally in, like, movies and TV shows, when they involve kids and things that involve a lot of cursing or violence, it becomes it's clear, or at least it's something I've learned to notice, that, like, they do various things sort of editing-wise to make it so that they don't have to have the kid in the room for that.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that, like,
yeah.
they protect the kid from having to do or say those things and just make it look to us as though they're doing and saying these things.
Yeah.
This, I was like, no, there is no way that, like, that little girl had to carry a prop head out
yeah.
and throw it. And then, I mean, obviously stunt doubles and all things, but she still had to do all that. It reminded me, in a way, of my reaction to seeing Kick-Ass.
Uh-huh.
And the sequence, the training sequence with Big Daddy and Hit Girl, where he shoots her in the chest with a gun.
Yeah.
And there's a part where it's like, right, these are kids.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
It did change my entire way of thinking about, like, Batman and Robin. And this also makes you think differently about all those comic books. Like, I was a big New Mutants fan. And, like, they do keep it all sort of bloodless, but, like, these are children
yeah.
having to do these things and having to live this thing. And it's so graphic now, because there's just, yeah, there was no holding back at
computers,
any point
yeah.
in this movie.
Yeah.
That it does make you wonder, like, there's a part of me that wonders, like, oh, are we here? But then there's another part of me that says, were we ever anywhere else and we just pretended it was okay? We just pretended it was okay that Batman trains a 12-year-old to fight crime.
Yeah.
And you're like, right, there is no possible way for that to be actually okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. So, first of all, when we're talking about movies, right?
right.
Or even animated, like Batman animated. First of all, like, comic books to me are a little bit different, because there's, especially, like, you're talking about Robin, and wow, we're mm-hmm. going to go over, I think. But when you're talking about Robin, you're talking about a character that's made for kids, right? For kids to
right.
identify with. And honestly, no kid ever identified with Robin. You wanted to be Batman. But,
exactly.
you know, it was kind of cool that he had, like, a sidekick. Now, even when you're looking back at the Adam West
mm-hmm.
Batman show, Robin is significantly older. Like, I mean,
yeah.
you're talking like 12. Robin's like maybe supposed to be 16 or something like that. Even that is
yeah.
sort of like pushing a boundary. And even Hit Girl, in Kick-Ass is older than this girl in Wolverine.
Yeah, she's 13. Like,
yeah, like for me, this kid is bordering on like maybe 10, like 11, which is hovering around my kid's age. And for me, like, you're definitely talking about a point where it's like, wow, it's just, it's becoming more and more acceptable, even particularly for female protagonists, like for this to be like a thing, like, and, and I don't have a problem necessarily. I mean, Leon the Professional is like one of my favorite movies of all time, but the character is also much more nuanced. It's saying like different things. It's saying things about maturity, like growing up and like exposure to violence. This isn't like that. This is sort of like a kid sort of like as a weapon of mass destruction. And and the things that she does. Now, let me be clear. Like, I've been on, you know, debating a little bit with friends on Facebook about this. I'm not for censorship. I do whatever you want in film. But at this point, there is a point in society where we've got a kid who is actively impaling and and cutting arms off and doing stuff like that. And we've sort of reached a point in society where obviously it's not okay because it's done for shock value, but in a way it kind of is okay. Does that make sense? Like,
It is, but I would say this about, I hear what you're saying, and I do think that there's definitely some pause to be like, okay, what are we saying about this? I personally feel like the movie, and this is what I mean about it, like the relationship to violence being adult, is that I feel like the movie is making that point. I mean, that's why they keep going back. One of the things that shows up a couple of times in this is a scene from Shane that they use where he's basically saying, you know, Shane is telling the kid in the movie that, like, he can't get away from the violence.
Yeah.
He's ruined because of this violence, and he needs to take himself out of this happy home because he can never be okay. Part of the just sort of jumping ahead in the plot here, like, part of the sort of journey for this is Logan trying to get Lara to a place where she can be free of this violence. The question, of course, that you have to have is whether or not, after the incredible levels of violence that she's gone through, whether she could ever be free of this violence. And that's worth thinking about. But also thinking about, is this a responsible depiction of this kind of violence involving a child like this?
Yeah, and that's sort of more where I'm going. Like, for me, I get the story. Like, the story for me is fantastic. Like, and it is rooted in, like, Westerns and Shane, which I've never seen and I have to see someday.
No, neither have I. And I realized watching this, I was like, Jack Palance is in this? I should totally see this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Playing the villain. Like, hello. But, like, for me, it is more about sort of the visual depiction of this as opposed to the thematic or story depiction of this. For me, it's like, is it okay for us? And look, I even said this on Facebook. I get that I am living in a Western, very sheltered, very sort of like upper class society. I live in Los Angeles in the United States of America. You know, this is not sort of like regions of the Middle East or Africa or even East Europe or whatever, where kids are bought and sold and like exploited or whatever. Like, like, or at least that is the viewpoint that I am living in. Like, I am very well aware that children are harmed and exploited all over the world. But I'm saying, like, as our society, like, we've reached a point where, for the point of a story, it's okay to show this, like, little girl impaled. And what are the repercussions of that? Like, you know what I'm saying? And there are, because I don't care what anybody says, there are. And are we cool with that? I mean, you know, because at some point, like, you know, that's the thing, is I feel that media is responsible for our behavior. It does change our behavior. It does affect us. It doesn't make us homicidal killers or whatever. But so we're like, what is the, and obviously the filmmakers in this movie are not saying that it is right to impale a kid or hurt a kid. But I just think, like, in general, maybe there's a bigger brain than me that can tackle this. But as a grown up adult who has a kid, or, you know, who has had friends who had kids, like, there is something, like, seriously disturbing about seeing that. And that's all I want to say. Like, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm not saying our society is going down the toilet, but I am just amazed that, like, and again, I said this on Facebook, a movie like Battle Royale, which came out like 10 years ago, people were terrified. They were like, oh my God, we cannot release this in the United States. You cannot show this in a theater. The religious right is going to freak out. People are going to lose their shit. And now we've reached a point where a little girl, you know, is able to, with claws, basically cut a dude's arm off. And for the sake of a story, like, it's cool. Is that advancement? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it is. Or maybe it's not. I don't know. Because then maybe you look at kids as sort of like, maybe that helps people look at kids, look at them sort of like something to, it's okay to treat them like that. I don't know. I don't know. Right. And I doubt that.
No, I mean, but I think there is a sort of like, you know, I don't know if you know the term, the Overton window, about like what's acceptable political discourse, but there is something about what's acceptable artistic discourse and how we've sort of shifted in that exact way. I mean, I checked in on that thread a little bit and someone mentioned Hunger Games, but I think one of the differences in the place that we are is that the book Hunger Games is a lot more vicious.
Yeah.
With a lot more very young children dying in the same way that like Game of Thrones, all of those kid characters are much, 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 much younger than they were even at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
You know, Arya is about the age of X-23 and does and experiences some truly horrific things in those books. And they had to age her up to like what you were saying, to like 15, to make it more okay for TV.
Yeah.
And this does not. I mean, she is a tiny little girl.
Yeah.
And who is very much a little girl. And you do wonder about what, especially since, despite the movie's very clear messages about violence and its use and effects, you know, a lot of people are just going to look at this movie and go, oh, cool. Isn't that cool? That little girl sliced that guy's head right off.
Exactly.
And not really see the sort of other side of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's just a thing that made me go, huh, while I was watching it. I'm like, huh, okay, this is okay now. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And, you know, we'll see. Obviously, there have been movies about bad, evil children since, like, The Bad Seed. You know what I mean? Or Village of the Damned and stuff like that. But this reaches a level of violence, which I'm like, okay. And obviously, again, somebody said on my thread, this is a rated R movie. And I'm like, yes, you are absolutely right. 100%. A kid should not. I don't think a kid should be able to see this at a certain age. You know what I mean?
No.
And I know for a fact that there were a couple of like young kids in my audience and I was just like, whatever, man, you know, I'm a parent. That's my choice. You know,
that's
but at some point what your kid is exposed to may leach into what my kid is not exposed to. And that's kind of like, you know, but in any case, just for me, it's sort of like how visual imagery sort of influences our society. And it's like, okay, like we're going with this now. And it made me a little, you know, maybe I'm old. It made me a little bit like, huh, I don't know, not sad, but sort of like, okay, well, I guess we're here now. You know what I mean? And again, I love the movie. I love the movie. So maybe I'm hypocritical and maybe you know, it's possible that a person can be or feel more than two or three things at a time.
I had. Let's not get crazy here. I mean,
I'm multifaceted.
In America, we don't accept people who can have complicated feelings about a thing.
And again, not disparaging the film. If you are a grown up and whatever, but for me, it's like, what does imagery affect and how does it affect people?
Right. Who's responsible for that? I mean, it's a good question, because even if it's not meant for children, I mean, is it okay for adults to watch this? Is it okay? Like, you know, the screening I went to was really packed. Everyone was really into it. It was not particularly cheery, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
But you could feel like some urges that, like, should we be cheering on watching a 10-year-old decimate five people?
Is that
really something we as a society should be like, yes, go get them?
They're
bad people and they deserve it. But like, which I think is actually one of the lines in the movie, but they're sort of like, are they all bad? How bad are these guys? I mean, you get into that like stormtrooper thing of, these are guys who just hired, they just got a job.
And also, you know, they have their view about the way that their society needs to exist. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And obviously it's kind of wrong. It is wrong from my point of view, you know, but obviously they have their own goals. They're trying to pay their own rent or whatever. You know, I mean, I don't know. These guys are much more insidious, but, you know, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There is this to go like into a totally, first of all, we've talked, you and I have personally talked about this. I like watching messed up movies. Like I I like horror movies. I have seen, you know, really bad, like other movies that other people like would hate, you know what I mean? And weird, yeah, bizarre, whatever stuff. And there is one movie that I won't watch or have not watched yet. And somebody actually gave me a copy of it because they saw it and they're like, this movie's messed up. You're going to go crazy. But it's called like a Siberian film or something like that.
And
apparently what I read about it, I mean, it's supposed to be really powerful, like crazy, messed up, like horror, you know, one of these movies. But apparently it involves like somebody not on screen, like molesting a child or having to molest a child. And I'm like, I won't go near it. Like, I won't,
yeah,
like, I'm not like, no, I don't want to watch that. Like, I don't want to have anything to do with that. I'm not interested in that. And it's just interesting to me that watching a kid impale somebody, whether however fictional it is. And obviously this movie, a Siberian film or whatever it's called, that did not happen. Like nobody, you know, it's just the portrayal of that. And so it's just,
right,
where in the line are we? So I will just leave it at that, that,
yeah,
you know, obviously I have a line, everybody has a line, but children for me, as everyone, I mean, even if you don't have a kid, and this isn't about protect the children, this is sort of about protect your own brain, even as an adult. So anyway, I've babbled on about it. It's a point that I wanted to make, and obviously it's a point I've been making with my friends on Facebook, some of who, which, whatever, agree or disagree anyway. But the point of the thing is it's a good movie. It's a really good movie. And we just went off really on a huge tangent like for 20 minutes, and I apologize.
It is a really good movie. Like it's, yeah, it is. I've been James Mangold, who directed this and also directed The Wolverine, which is not a very good movie.
He directed Copland.
He directed Copland, which is a great indie movie.
Yeah.
Early 2000s. If you haven't seen it, go check it out.
Yeah.
And then since then has been sort of like bopping around, like,
yeah, yeah,
middling action movies and some dramas, a couple of sort of
Walk the Line.
He did Walk the Line, which I was not a huge fan of, to be honest.
Really? Oh, okay. But I liked it. Yeah.
This like is so heartfelt and really beautifully made and beautifully shot. And yes, it's like, it hits all the sort of like reluctant retired hero tropes. There's a little Unforgiven in it. There's a little Paper Moon with the relationship with the kid and,
yeah,
all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it still all felt really fresh and smart and alive and really sort of like honest in a way that was just touching.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the performances, I cannot say enough about like all of the performances in this movie being so strong.
Dead on.
And, like, perfectly cast. There's a great and ultimately really, really fucking tragic, and I knew it was going to be tragic, and it still was.
I didn't think it was going to be that bad, though, man.
Oh, it was so awful. There's this, yeah, tragic interlude in the middle where they wind up with this family played by, of all people, Eric fucking LaSalle.
Yeah, it was great to see him. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, what is this? And it's still also like beautiful. And again, that sense of this wider world where he's this farmer staving off this like mega farm that's encroaching on his land and fucking with his water. And you get that sense of this world that's just fraying at the edges. And it's great. All of that is just great and like touching, and it's such a good movie.
Yeah.
When I was watching, I thought like Unforgiven, if this was not a superhero movie, this would be in the conversation conversation for best movies of the year, and would be already like an early conversation about Oscars. Like, if this movie were about cowboys or anything else, it would be a no-brainer that it would be at least in that conversation. And it is such a shame that comic book movies, and this maybe this will be the one that changes it, but comic book movies haven't reached that place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Deadpool got a lot of recognition last year, but I feel like this, Deadpool is a fun movie. I feel like this, in a lot of ways, is very smart. Because just,
yes,
even the fact that it it spawns the conversation that we just had. There's so much other really interesting stuff layered in there that is not heavy-handed, but it kind of makes you, again, it makes you really go, it makes you go, huh? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
as Arsenio Hall or CNC Music Factory, right? Things that make you, you know, it definitely, you know, I mean, like one of the big things is like, I have a relative who is a, who drives trucks. You know, and I was watching, and one of the ideas, the things that I have had, you know, driving the 5 freeway in Los Angeles for years and years and years to get to work is the fact that I feel that trucks, semis, even with drivers, should have their own freeway, like their own like 2-lane freeway on the side. Sort of like, if we're not going to have a railroad, let's have a dedicated, you know, semi freeway so that they can just transport goods and pedestrians, civilians don't have to deal with the scariness of driving next to a truck or a truck slowing down traffic or whatever. And in one scene in this movie, they have self-driving trucks. They've already left.
Yeah.
And the self-driving truck almost drives them off the road, you know, and causes an accident, which is how they meet the Eric LaSalle and his family's character, because they stop to help them. And it's just really interesting to me that, you know, just that alone will make you think, like that little bit, you know, will make you go, hey, wait a minute. Like, they're going to have self-driving trucks. Is this a good idea? You know, which it isn't necessarily, you know what I'm saying? Unless they're on their own road. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
So it's just, we're going to have self-driving cars. And it seems like technology, and that's one of the things that, that this, even with Wolverine himself being a fighting machine and the kids being genetically engineered on, it seems like this whole movie is filled with a message of like, technology is really moving rapidly and we're not paying attention. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
All these great things. Like, they even get into sort of like corn syrup and you know, genetically modified stuff. And, you know, scientists say is okay. And, you know, other people say corn syrup is, you know, I'm anti-corn syrup, but, you know, whatever. I mean, there's all this really interesting, subtle stuff that is kind of like layered in that if you're looking out for it, you're like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. And it's a little bit futurist, right?
Yeah, no, it's a great depiction of a very near future. And you're right. It brings up all of those questions about, you know, genetic modification, cloning and enhanced, like, you know, the company that, you know, has created X-23 and all these other, all the other kids really does just look at them as a product. As a thing that they own that's malfunctioning. And that's like, and are they children or are they not? And like, that's a moral quandary.
And I mean, these are things that are being debated, disputed now in our courts and stuff like that, like whether genetic material can be owned by a company, like, you know, and how far down the road is that just like people are just cattle? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, and the other thing too is like, is, you know, Eric LaSalle has this great line where he's talking about energy drinks and he says something like, oh, you used to be that you just had a bad day and you just had a bad day. Now it's like, you know, they're genetically engineering things so that you can, you know, get more pep and stuff like that. And
yep.
I was just like, holy cow. And it's a throwaway line. It's kind of just like, but it stuck out to me. And it's just like, this movie is like so like layered with all that stuff. And like, what, where are we going and what are we becoming? And like you said, it's sort of a very deep superhero film.
And
it will sort of be possibly discarded because it is in that genre, right? Not just for Oscar consideration, but what it's saying.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I'm really, like, this is the first movie, and I love, you know, all the MCU movies. They're super fun. I'm excited about Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. But this is the first time where I feel like this is a legit great movie, and it should be seen as such. And I hope that it does confer some legitimacy to the genre of comic book movie. Like, it's a comic book movie. I'm not one of those, I dislike the idea that, like, oh, this doesn't deserve the comic book tag. Like, it's a comic book movie, it's a comic book character, it's a superhero movie, but it is deep and thoughtful and adult and wrestling with sort of big questions very, very well. and it deserves to be considered on that front.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's a really good piece of like sci-fi too. I mean, yeah. beyond the superhero genre, it's sort of like this big sort of like, you know, the successful science fiction films, the ones that you really remember are the ones that like, you know, like Soylent Green, even like Planet of the Apes, stuff like that, mm-hmm. that bring up questions in the background that are like, well, what is, you know, what's going on? Even Star Wars, thinly veiled, like Eastern mysticism, like what is totalitarian? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what are the relations between good and evil? Like, it's just like really, it's just interesting to me because like the film hits you on a very visceral level, but it hides like a lot of little messages in there that are, you know, kind of powerful if you think about them.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the second Captain America movie kind of touch that as far as like our surveillance state, you know what I mean? So we are sort of seeing this, but I think this one kind of went full bore. Like, I mean, Captain America did too, but I think this one was like, sort of had it. Here's the other thing. Okay. Like, yeah, we're going a little longer, but here's the other thing. The thing is that first of all, this is the first sort of, well, the other two were, but it's removed from everything else. That's the other thing. It stands on its own, which has been for me the biggest part of the Marvel Universe movies, which is like, why do we have to tie them in? Can't Thor just have his own Thor movie? I mean, I know that they're tying them all in. So this is very removed from everything else. That's what makes it work. The other thing that I kept thinking about while I was watching it is it's really interesting to me because it is dark and the character is not quippy. He is not like, ha ha ha, making jokes or whatever. And, you know, he's not Iron Man, you know, teasing people. He is not funny. You know, what happens to him is funny. His reaction to stuff sometimes is funny. But he is not quippy and it still works. Like, and I was like, wow, this is very different than other movies of this kind besides it's being rated R.
Right. You know, it is. That's exactly what I mean about like the difference between this and Deadpool.
Yeah.
Which to me is a super fun movie, but is still aimed at sort of like 22-year-old boys. And this is a much more serious, contemplative thing without being sort of pretentious or lugubrious, to use a few more big ass words about it. Like it just takes all of this really seriously. And it feels like to me, I know we're going on, but it feels like to me like this should be it. That like Fox should be like, okay, we are done with all of this stuff that we've done here. And if we're going to re-enter the X-Men, we're either just going to enter into more sort of one-off stories that aren't part of a wider thing, or we're going to start the whole thing off from the beginning. I can't imagine seeing Hugh Jackman playing Logan again.
Let me tell you, the only thing that I want to see him show up in is if he shows up in like an Avengers movie. Like that, I would be like, all right, I'm down with that. Like
one more time, if Marvel gets it back and they can integrate into the Avengers, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
One time, but other than that, like start it over, bring new people, bring a sort of new spirit to this thing.
I agree.
I think would be great.
Yeah, and I think they tried that with First Class, but it just didn't work. It wasn't a hard reset. Like
it wasn't. They didn't try hard enough. Yeah.
But think about how much you would lose your shit if Logan showed up. I mean, first of all, I never liked Wolverine being an Avenger. I was just like, oh God, you know, that was sort of the Bendis thing of like, you know, all the really cool characters, it should be like the Justice League, all the really cool, you know, popular characters should be in the Avengers. And, you know, Wolverine happens to be one of those, but I would definitely lose my shit if Hugh Jackman as Wolverine showed up in like Infinity War 1, you know what I mean? And just like as a cameo, even I would be like, holy cow, they did
it. I'd be so thrilled.
You know, but and just one of the last things that I want to touch on too, the farmhouse sequence, which you mentioned. First of all, before I just say that, I'm really excited that Laura's half Latin. First of all, that's really great, just like me. The other thing, and that she spoke Spanish, love it. The other thing that I love, or that really hit me, the farmhouse sequence. This is the sequence because, spoiler again, X-24 shows up. And this is basically Wolverine completely without compunction, completely without conscience, completely without. And for the first time, like, it's really interesting. I said, like, in the beginning of the movie, for the first time, we see the berserker rage and blah, 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 blah. But I think for the first time in, like, film or, you know, even animation or whatever, you know, moving pictures, we get to see what Wolverine would be like without anything, like, holding him back. And that was horrifying.
Oh my God, so horrifying. That character, and a great double, I mean, obviously CGI'd up, but a great double performance from Hugh Jackman playing X-24, and that was shocking how terrifying that was.
Chilling. Yeah, really, really, I mean, even beyond, like, Terminator, Terminator 2, like, this is when you get to see what he was made for, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know that we've ever really, you know, again, I'm not deeply rooted or steeped in Wolverine mythology or whatever, but at least in a movie or a film or animated thing, this is the first time where you see what they want. And it's just like, yeah, because I don't know that ever has really hit readers. You know what I mean? Like, this is what they want. And this is what they want. And that is horrifying. That is just, there's no two ways about it. If, ands, or buts. Like, if you have that out there and it has no conscience and you can, and they can barely control it at one point, like, that's just no good.
Yeah, that would have been... That Wolverine, unleashed on anyone at all, would have been a nightmare. It was just, oh, God, so dead-eyed. Oh,
there's just no coming back from that. And it leads to, like, an amazing sequence where you're very much like, how is Logan going to win this? Because you're done. You know what I mean? And it's just some really great stuff and plays out fantastically. I mean, again... Yeah, it's a great movie. Everyone should see it. Anyone who's had an interest. I even think people who I recommended it to a friend of ours who is not necessarily even into superhero movies, I was like, I think you're going to like it because I think it's very sort of, it's its own thing. And that's what I feel like a lot of these movies need to be. You should have, like, tangential ties, but they should really be their own movies. And I think that's what helps Logan work a lot.
I agree with that. I very much agree that, like, it being its own movie and just telling this story really, really helped keep it tight and clear and allowed them just sort of the room to play.
Yeah. All right. So Wolverine, excuse me, Logan, I keep calling it Wolverine. Logan gets five claws from us.
Five claws.
I mean, I think it's nearly flawless. And which is a lot for an X-Men movie because I have not been crazy about this franchise at all from the beginning. And I mean, I've liked them. I own some of them on DVD, but as a whole, I've generally been disappointed. This is the first one where I have not been disappointed at all. And I'm like, this is kind of perfection and will make you think in a way like it kind of did me. So in any case, any final thoughts, Jay?
Nope, that's it. Go check it out. It's great. You're going to have a really good time.
I think I'm going to see it again. In any case, this has been Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian Horn, and I'm on the line with my friend Jay Holtham. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Leave us a review on iTunes, and thank you again for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy.